I'm looking for something to protect me from this. Like, sure. what is happening? Like, what's going on to make sense of all of this? So I'm like, I don't know what I can pray authentically. Because he was like, you know, why don't you repeat after me? And so I said, actually, let me just pray something first. Let me just say something first. So I just said, Jesus, I can't say you're the Lord of my life because I don't know you. I can't say I love you, I believe in you, because I don't know you. But if you will save me from this, I'll give you my whole life.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, hey, everybody, I am so excited about our conversation today. I've been looking forward to this a long time because I wanted to have a conversation with our guest starting about 10 years ago when I read his very first book. It's called Ex-Muslim. Naeem Fazel was raised in Kuwait as a Muslim and then eventually had a life-changing encounter with Jesus. Today, he's the pastor of Mosaic Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's married, he has two kids, and Naeem, I'm so glad that after 10 years, I can finally talk to you live. Welcome to the show.
Man, so glad to be here. So glad. Thank you.
Yeah, glad to have you.
I'm pumped about it. I love sharing the story, and man, it's been 10 years since that book. Wow.
That's the that reaction. What you just said is the reaction I had, because I had this idea. I was thinking about people I would really appreciate a conversation with, and I thought of you, and so I grabbed your book off my shelf, and I thought, how long ago did I read this? I'm thinking it's a few years ago, and then I look at the date, and because I bought it, right. I bought it right when it came out because I saw a pre-release review or something, and I thought this looks like a great book. So I bought it right when it came out, and I thought, this is crazy. Do you still get people reaching out based on the first book, or is that, I'm guessing it's quite down, but.
Yeah. I think it was genius for the team that helped me develop it, the idea, because it started with my story, like as in the book was about, it's a kind of a memoir. And what's really great about that is like when you start with your first book as a memoir, it's timeless, you know? So it's always relevant.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It was not on a particular subject, yeah. So, yeah, man, it's been translated in different languages now. And then I guess Audible wasn't a thing back then. It just came out on Audible last year. So
did that lead to all kinds of fresh traction once it was on Audible? Did you see sort of a resurgence of interest and whatnot?
Yeah, totally did. I did. And people were hoping that I would be the guy that reading it, but I tried that. Just for your listeners only, I actually have like dyslexia and dysgraphia, and English is not my first language. And so it made it extremely hard for me and painful for the studio guys to try to get me to read my book, my own book. And did not happen, my friend. So I've got another guy.
Well, sometimes you have to just embrace this is not going to be my lane. And we just had a volunteer party here at our church, and they tried to get me to be part of a One Direction song that a bunch of guys were going to dance to and put on wigs. And I went to the rehearsal, and I fired myself after one rehearsal. I said, this is somebody else's sweet spot. So, well, you know, you mentioned English not being your first language, and let's go back to your background, because even though you were raised in Kuwait, you're actually Pakistani. But tell us about your growing up experience, and just help kind of paint the picture for our listeners.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Kuwait. And so if you're familiar with that part of the world, it's an Arab country. But my parents are Pakistani immigrants. So my dad moved there like when he was 18, started working there. And a lot of the population in a place like Kuwait, they're all foreign nationals. Like 90% of them are all immigrants.
Interesting.
Only 10% of the population is actually Kuwaitis, something like that. You know, it fluctuates a little bit, but that percentage is pretty high of immigrants. So my dad moved there. My mom, he married my mom. They moved there and they started raising a family. And so I was born in Kuwait, but I am Pakistani. the other thing there is because of such high immigration, they have different schools there. So they've got Indian schools, Pakistani schools, American schools, French schools. I mean, they've got different nationalities there. And so I went to an Indian school, surprisingly, because my mom and dad were convinced that, you know, Pakistanis weren't great with academics. And so they put me in an Indian school. So just imagine, man, I'm a guy who speaks Urdu, which is, you know, a Pakistani language. I'm in a country which is Arabic, that they all speak Arabic. I'm going to a school where there are Indians that speak Hindi, and the curriculum is in English. So, hello.
That was crazy. Was it disorienting, or was that just life for you? I mean, you know, did you, as a kid, think, oh my goodness, this is crazy. I'm in the midst of all these different cultures, or was it like, no, this is just what I do?
I don't think I realized it, but because as a kid, when you're learning languages, you just learn languages. Now, I was really poor in academics, and that's probably because I realized years later when my daughter was born and when she started developing, realized that, oh no, I do the same thing she does, and she was diagnosed as having dyslexia and dysgraphia. So I'm like, oh, that was me growing up. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So I think that played a huge part. But then, you know, I mean, it was a very international country. I mean, our best friends and our neighbors were Palestinians. I worked, when I was a teenager, I worked with Filipinos, Yeah, it was cool, man.
Cosmopolitan growing up, but your parents would you consider them practicing Muslims? Was the Muslim worldview one that you really, you would say that's what I embraced as a child and was used to, or were they not so much?
Yeah, we were Sunni Muslims. So if you know anything about Islam, they've got Sunni, Shia, the big major groups. And Sunnis are pretty conservative. And my mom covered up. She wore the hijab. I have two brothers, two sisters. My sisters covered their hair. We were, fasting. You would fast during Ramadan, celebrate all the Eids, if you know those. Those are special holidays. And then... depending, and in Ramadan, we try to pray five times a day. Mostly it was like Juma prayers, which would be Friday prayers, which is the thing. My mom was more of a 5 days, you know. But we also grew up having to go to the mosque and learn to recite and memorize, I should say, the parts of the Quran and recite them. So, I don't know if you know, but all the prayers in Islam are in Arabic. And regardless of what kind of Muslim you are, what kind of language you speak, you still have to pray in only one language.
Right. So. And as you're growing up, so very much a practicing family, of all the different cultures you just mentioned, I'm not sure if you would have necessarily rubbed shoulders with other Christians at that time or consciously did. Did you have much of an exposure to folks who would call themselves Christians?
Yeah, so the only only exposure I had were Indians. So you remember I grew up in, not grew up, but I went to an Indian school. Mm-hmm. So in this Indian school, you had a variety of Indians. You had like Catholics and you had Hindus.
Okay.
And so I mostly had Hindu friends. I knew a couple of Catholics, you know. I actually took communion as a Muslim guy.
No kidding.
I just kind of played along with it. Yeah. We were going to go out after that to a party, and I just kind of, they're like, hey, we got to go to mass. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I had no idea. So my exposure to Christianity, not so much, you know, mm-hmm. just different religions for sure.
Okay. And I know a big part of what will eventually lead you to coming to know Jesus and having an encounter with him is tied in with both your brother and your brother's move to the U.S. So tell us all about that journey.
Yeah, so what happened is my brother is about 4 years older than me, and he got accepted to a college in the U.S. Like, so we're in Kuwait, and this is a big deal that he applies and he gets in. A couple of his buddies from Kuwait, Indian guys, were going to try to go to the States. And so, yeah, they did it. He applied, and his grades, I mean, he's a smart guy. And so he got in, and he got accepted to a college. It was a 2-year college. And at that time, we didn't really realize or care, but it was called, it was in South Carolina. It was called Spartanburg Methodist University.
Okay.
And we had no idea what Methodist meant. So we're like, okay, great, America.
You just know. You just know it's in the U.S.
Right. We're like, hey, this is the U.S. Right. Okay, send him. So, yeah, it was such a big, big deal for our immediate family and our cousins and the whole thing. It was unheard of that he was going to get a chance to come to the States. So he did. Yeah, he came to Spartanburg, South Carolina. And, man, he had an experience that the next year he came back and told us, and that's when things got sideways. Yeah.
And when you say had an experience, you're talking specifically spiritually. Maybe you can unpack that just a little bit of what his experience was.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. So he comes back the first year, I think, or the second year, but he comes back and he goes, I'm a born-again believer. And I'm like, what? You're a born-again what? And he's like, I'm a follower of Jesus, and I'm not a Muslim anymore. Now, he tells me this and my sisters, and not mom and dad, and I flip out. Like, I lose my mind. I don't know what happened to me. I grab him by the neck, pin him against the wall, and I cuss him out. I threaten to kill him. I'm like, you will not do this. You're not going to. I mean, I am just going crazy. Mm-hmm. He's shocked. My sisters are shocked. I'm shocked, you know? And I'm like, what just happened?
Yeah.
But I knew that this guy was doing something that is, I mean, it's the worst thing you could ever do, because Islam is not it's like a nationality more than a religion.
Mm-hmm.
So when you switch or whatever, you're a traitor to the nationality. So that's what there's a universal, you know, brotherhood or whatever you want to call it, or familyhood in Islam, because it's like a spiritual nationality.
Yeah, we have a lot of friends in Turkey and visit Turkey regularly, and they will say to be Turkish is to be Muslim. I mean, it's just that's the way it is. So to be anything else is like a betrayal of your entire cultural heritage. Sounds like it was the same for you growing up.
Same, yeah. And so I shocked him, and to the point, but he didn't say anything to mom and dad. And then he came back, you know, after the summer break or whatever. And right after that, Iraq, which was a neighboring country of Kuwait, it invaded Kuwait. And that was the first Gulf War in 1990, mm-hmm. if you guys remember that. So we were stuck there, and my brother was stuck here in the U.S. And we decided to stick it out. Like, so, you know, a lot of the foreign nationals left after the occupation. It lasted for 9 months, pretty aggressive, but then the Desert Storm started and all that. And then in 1992, Kuwait, you know, I mean, it was liberated. In 1992 is when I actually got a chance to come to the U.S.
Okay. So you get to the U.S. and you join, well, I know you initially came into Florida, but you got to where your brother was at school. And that's a great story by itself. People have to get the book for that one. But I think it was a bus ride, right? You use the money you had to get a bus ride to get to where your brother's at. And you finally find him. And tell me a little bit about what was it like first just getting used to the U.S.? I mean, just culturally, that is a huge step.
Yeah, it was. It was. I was, you know, with my personality, I think I was really pumped about it. You know, I wasn't really anxious. I was like, let's do this. I'd watched enough The A-Team back in the day, if you remember that show.
Oh, yeah, I do.
David Hasselhoff was, you know, was the man. I was like, yeah, that's what it's going to be. And so the problem is that, you know, I'm always better in my head than in person. So I thought I was the coolest guy ever. But found out that I had a thick, thick accent. Didn't understand a lot of just how people were talking, mm-hmm. and, you know, and phrases people would use and all that. So it was kind of a culture shock to find out, oh, I stand out, but not in all the good ways.
Right.
But man, when I got here, things spiritually moved so fast for me. Like you said, I mean, I got from the bus ride from Miami to Charleston, and that week I was invited to attend FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, like this collegiate group, and my brother, all his friends were like I call them super Christians, but they were like all Christians, and I just knew these are not the people I thought, like Americans. These people are different. Because I also used to smoke back then, and I'm like, okay, these guys don't smoke. And they don't curse. I mean, their language, they're not. I did all of that, and I'm like, these guys are very proper. Or what's going on here? So,
how did they treat you as you were mixing in with them, and obviously still very new to the country?
Yeah, great. Some of them were just, you know, really wanted me to become a Christian. Like, I knew really quick. And I'm like super annoyed by the whole thing. I'm like, it seems like, I don't know, a cult or something. I don't know what these guys are all about. So I was not, you know, open to them, but I was like trying to experience all kinds of things, you know, like, so, so yeah, that's why I attended with my brother. I mean, I had nothing else to do.
I recall a certain part of the story being your brother may or may not have mentioned that there would be some cute girls at FCA. So it sounds like may have been a part of the draw.
That was for sure. He was like, yes, come on, man.
That's great.
And I talk about in the book about, you know, like this whole idea of like being fascinated with blondes. I'm like, or just people like women with like, I mean, honestly, I mean, you don't grow up with white people, you know? So all white people were like fascinating. I'm like, how is this? You know, how's that? Like, what? It's so different. So, yeah. I went for that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I have a feeling you're not the only guy who's ever attended some kind of Christian function because he heard there would be ladies there or even a specific one. You know, that story's been told a couple times, I think. So then you're going to some FCA meetings, you're meeting Christians. Some of them are annoying as far as just the level of press, in a sense, they're giving you evangelistically. Yeah. I'm guessing others are just treating you well and with love and getting to know you and all that. What really how did the domino fall then? Tell us about that when it came to actually being seriously open to Jesus. And I know there's a significant prayer. Maybe you could just tell us about that.
Yeah. So what happened is that I started attending. The people were good. You know, I was not like, oh my gosh, they're so different. I mean, they were like friendly, but the message I heard was the thing that I just really thought it was absurd. Like I thought the idea that there's a God out there who's pursuing you, that's out there already. That's very different from Islam, and that He will pursue you and reveal Himself to you. And my brother kept on saying, he was like, just, you know, if you ask Jesus to reveal Himself, He'll show you. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? He's like, God will show up. Huh. He was like, He'll do it. And he would continually press that point to the point I'm like, I don't know. I think you're nuts. Like, I would mock him. Hmm. Like, I mean, I remember walking down somewhere and looking at a bush. And I said, hey, so what about, can I ask the God to come and burn the bush? And he was like, straight up, he'd be like, yes, if you ask Him sincerely, He'll do it for you. And I'm like, you are your mind. so then when I heard the idea of this God who's extremely personal, a God who understands that you could never reach Him, that He has to reach out to you, this idea of God being, I mean, there's so many things I can go down, but the big deal was that there is a God who's extremely personal, who wants to know you, intrigued me. So one night at FCA, I mean, it was like three meetings into it. Like, it was quick, three meetings into it. I'm like, I look up. I mean, they're doing their thing. I just kind of think to myself, you know what? If you're real, show me. And that's all I kind of did. You know, I looked up at one point and just kind of, but I didn't believe that I was really talking to anybody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And 3 nights later, man, everything changed. I mean, you know, yeah.
What happened?
Oh, well, so I'm trying to fall asleep. I'm reading a book and the lights are all on, you know, in my room, and my brother's in the other room. And I put the book down. I go to shut off the lamp light that was right next to me. And I noticed that the room changed, the dynamic of the room. I don't know what happened, but my body began reacting to something that I couldn't really see. I didn't know what was happening. It felt like death and fear walked into the room. I mean, I started just reacting. Looking around, I thought there were things in the room that were moving. I couldn't really explain it. And while I'm trying to figure that out, that moment, I find like something grabs my shoulders and pins me to my pillow. And then something just takes over my legs and I'm paralyzed. The only thing I can move is my neck. And I'm like moving back and forth and I'm like, what's happening? And now this is happening really quick. And so I start just reacting. And I start screaming or yelling out for my brother or just saying some things. And I realize I cannot hear myself say anything, like nothing's coming out. And now I'm like freaking out, bro. Like I'm like flipping out. I don't know what's going on. I can move my neck. So I know that I'm not asleep. Like, and then the room is just, I can't tell you, man. It's like moving into another dimension, Brian. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was. Finally, the door opened up and I thought my brother heard me, but in walks this demon. And, you know, I don't know if you know anything about Muslims, but we don't believe in demons or, you know, like when I end up, you know, demons, vampires, werewolves,
yeah,
Twilight, right. You know what I'm saying? We're not right. Any of that. Right. So I'm like, this doesn't even work. So this thing walks in and I'm like, oh my gosh. In my head, I'm like, dude, wrong room. Like, this is not the space. But it gets closer and then it starts communicating to me and I can understand him. And he goes, I'm going to kill you. You're going to die. You're going to die. And man, at that point, man, I started like thinking, oh no, I ticked off something up there, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like number one, I thought this was Allah, the God of Islam, because I thought, you know, I started going to FCA, you know. You know, dang those women. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, yeah.
I started going, yeah. Yeah.
This is like a judgment or some kind of punishment.
Right. Because I doubted. And doubting is one of the worst sins. Or I thought maybe this is Jesus because I made fun of him. I mean, I was super disrespectful. And then I thought, look, this is not any of those, you know? And so this thing starts getting closer and closer. And I'm thinking, this is it. It's over. And it reaches my bed and the next thing I know, yeah, it's gone. And whatever was holding me, let's go. And I'm just stunned, sitting in my bed. I mean, laying on my bed going, what just happened? And the room's still weird. I slowly get up. And then I run out of the room, wake up my brother. And I'm like, hey, what'd you put in my drink? Like, what'd you do? And I tell him what happened, you know? And he was like, tell me what, you know, and I tell him, he's like, were you having a dream? And I'm like, no. I mean, like, I think you can see the marks of something holding me, like the a press point, you know, on my neck. And he was like, well, this is probably true then. This is actually in the Bible. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? That shocked me because I'd never read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was like it was like another holy book, right? People don't understand it. Talks about sin, stuff you shouldn't do. Blah blah blah. I didn't know about how the Bible was structured and all that. And he goes, "Look, there are stories of Jesus and he encountered demons." Mind boggling, bro. I'm like, I did not know this was a thing. He tells me about it, and I'm like, okay. So I got a demon like on me, like what, like. This is real and they can do stuff. I'm like, I was so scared out of my mind. And so I said, okay, so what do I do? And then he began talking to me about, you know, the gospel. He began telling me about what Jesus did and all that. And I'm like, okay, great. And, And I, you know, honestly, I'm like, he took me down the Romans road kind of deal, you know, confess with your mouth and believe in your heart. And I'm like, listen, I don't, right now, I'm not looking for forgiveness. I'm like, you know, I think I'm great. I'm looking for something to protect me from this. Like, sure. What is happening? Like, what's going on to make sense of all of this? So I'm like, I don't know what I can pray authentically. Because he was like, you know, why don't you repeat after me? And so I said, actually, let me just pray something first. Let me just say something first. So I just said, Jesus, I can't say you're the Lord of my life because I don't know you. I can't say I love you, I believe in you, because I don't know you. But if you will save me from this, I'll give you my whole life. Hmm. So I said that, prayed that. Then he prayed for me. He asked me to pray, to invite Jesus in and all that. And I said, all right, amen, amen. He's like, all right, man. Okay, I'll see you in the morning. And I'm like, no, I'm not going back in the room.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, go back in the room. I'm like, are you out of your mind, bro? And he's like, no, go back in the room. I'm like, no, I'm not going back in the room. In fact, I'm going to spoon you for the next month. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm here. I'm with you.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, no. And he gives me, you won't believe this, he gives me a Gideon Bible. And the it's the one that's not you find in hotel rooms. It's like the to-go Bible.
Yeah,
it's
the little bitty ones. Yeah.
Right. He gives me that, a green one. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is the Bible. And he was like, yeah. I'm like, I thought it would be bigger. Like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And he was like, no, this is the old New Testament. Just read it. You'll be fine and all that. And man, we argued for a while. I was like, did not want to go back in the room. And finally, he dared me to like, hey, this is, you know, you got to do this. You got to face this yourself. And so I went back in the room and turned on all the lights and started reading. And you know, when you're scared, everything makes a sound, right? Everything makes a sound.
Yeah.
So I'm like freaking out, stressed out, can hear everything. You know, I'm like, oh my gosh. Finally, I'm like, I'm so mad, so frustrated. And I put the Bible down. I will go shut off the lights, get back in my bed. And I just say, I look up again and I go, Jesus, if I die tonight, it is your fault. Huh. And I put the covers over my head. I mean, that's all I knew. I mean, you know, I'm 18 years old. I have no idea. I just got out of a war. I'm here trying to figure things out. And now I've got demon issues. And I'm like, what's happening with my life? Like, I'm like, whoever's up there, just leave me alone. That'd be just great. You know, like, just leave me alone. Because I don't want to do anything. I don't want to be anything. I don't want to be a Muslim. I don't want to be a Christian. I just want to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, that's what I was feeling. So now I'm in my bed, covers on me, and I feel like something's trying to shake me. And I'm like, oh no, you know, this is like round two. And the next thing I know, I find myself sitting on my bed with my eyes open, and Brian, I'm looking at, I mean, like there he was, man. And I can't explain exactly, but there was this figure that I was looking at him, but I was inside of him. I know it's the weirdest thing. I mean, I literally remember saying, I'm inside of you. And I was like, this is so strange. I've never felt peace so aggressive.
Wow.
A presence so intoxicating. I knew that this body could not be in that presence for long.
Did you believe in that moment, this is Jesus, this is the Christian God? What were you identifying that presence with specifically?
Yeah, so when I was shocked by that presence, then it communicated. Then it said something, like to me, in my soul. It was like, and it said clearly, I am Jesus, and your life is not your own.
Mm.
So basically, what I just prayed, I heard, okay, I'm him, and your life is now going to be the same, and it's not your own. And I heard that so clearly, and I'm like, and again, I'm trying to stay awake. Like, my eyes is trying to still stay open because I couldn't keep my eyes off of him, but I couldn't keep my eyes open, you know? And the next thing I knew, man, I was out. It was morning. I got up and I felt like I had gotten a download, a purpose for life.
Wow.
Like this was going to be my life. I had plans to be like an art major. I was into art. I was going to be a painter, something to do with the art world, maybe design world. I just knew that was not it. My life was just, this is going to be my life, and that my life was going to be in ministry. And I had no idea what even that word meant. Like what does that mean?
But you just sensed a calling even then that this is where you were headed. Wow.
Oh yeah. It was just, you're doing this, and this is, your life is not your own.
It's crazy. So, I mean, now, globally, dreams and visions, when you hear frequently when Muslims come to know Christ, we hear and read that dreams and visions are really quite common for Muslims. Has that been, I don't know to what extent you've talked to other folks with a Muslim background who have come to know Christ, but have you heard stories like that? Maybe not in the particulars, but in general encounter kind of a thing. Have you heard that from others?
Yeah. There are a lot of stories like that. And personally, I've met in the book, Ex-Muslim, I talk about this story, but also the story of my two sisters and my younger brother coming to faith as well.
Wow.
So by the end of the book, you'll realize that they all had supernatural events and things happened to them. My two sisters, I was part of their moment, introducing them to Jesus. But I mean, I can't even say I introduced them to Jesus because it literally was so supernatural with his presence there. So it's amazing story. So wow. Yes, the answer is yes. The thing is, you don't hear a whole lot about it is because there's intense and very real, not just persecution, but danger when Muslims come out publicly, as followers of Jesus. I mean, I think that's why God does that and gives us a gift, us as Muslim background, believers, a gift of, like, they can't deny it. Like, you're going to sacrifice a whole lot, and because of that, I'm going to show up and let you know.
Were your other siblings who came to Christ still in Kuwait when they did so, or were they in the U.S.? And I'm asking that because it seems like it would be a very different experience to accept Christ and start following him in the U.S. as opposed to an Islamic country. And so, were they in the U.S. when they had that experience, or was that?
They were. And I've talked to Muslims in Muslim countries who've converted, and it's extremely tough. And they've got to go underground, or they have to, depending on where you live, you either have to move. You definitely have to move, cities. The problem with that is that the culture, Muslim culture, is very much a family culture. Mm-hmm. So you've got multiple generations living together or living in proximity. And then all of a sudden, if one goes, "Hey, I'm out of here," it's such a big deal, Like, that's why the story of Abraham is actually such a big deal when God says, "I want you to leave your home," because the word home there is not leave your dad's place and go find another apartment. No, it's like leave the legacy of your family, which is so out there,
Yeah, that's where your background is so helpful, I'm sure, for interpreting the Bible, because when we think of ancient Near East backgrounds in the Bible, your cultural proximity to those backgrounds is a lot more than, say, someone like me.
I would think so. I mean, because the first time I remember the phrase that Jesus said on the cross, that was in Aramaic, Ilahi, ilahi, lama sabachthani. So when I read that, I was like, hold up. This sounds a lot like Arabic. And so I did not, learning, I was like, oh, he spoke Aramaic, which is partly Arabic and partly Jewish as well, and different. So Ilahi, Ilahi is Allah, Allah, which is the word directly related to God. And Limada is why have you? And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like totally connected. So yeah, I could... There's so much of scripture that it's a privilege to have that background. So when I read some of the sayings of Jesus, I'm like, oh, he actually means this, not necessarily what a Westerner would interpret it as.
Now, you've got all of your siblings coming to know Christ. How are mom and dad processing all of this?
Oh, man. It was, I'll tell you a crazy story. So when my first sister came to Christ, it was the three of us. And the way it happened for her was that, I won't go into the whole story because we'll be here forever, but she got accepted to the College of Charleston because we moved from Spartanburg to Charleston, South Carolina, and started going to school there. So my experience happened in Charleston. We were in Charleston. My brother was in college there as well. My sister got accepted there too. And then so she had an experience as well. So the three of us were Christians. Then the next year, my mom and dad, my younger sister and another brother, they came to visit. And the idea was, okay, can they stay? Like, can we do something? Can we figure it out? And so dad had to go back and they could stay for a little bit longer because of a tourist visa situation. Okay. He had to go back. So when he went back, the idea was that we would tell mom who we were, because while they were here living with us, I mean, we're like still Muslim, you know, like we're like, you know, so, you know, so, but we're like, okay, if they're going to stay here a little bit long term, what are we going to do? Because we were wanting for dad to leave, because if dad was still in the country and we would have told them, he would have packed us all up and said, okay, everybody out. Mm. We're all leaving, going back to Kuwait. So strategically, we let him go first. And then, yeah. And then, man, my brother and sister nominated me as the guy to tell my mom.
Thank you for that, siblings.
Yeah. That was, man, it was so rough. I mean, I took my mom for a walk and broke her heart, man. Mm. And she got into a deep depression right after that. It's pretty strict. She stopped eating. And then one night she came out of her room and she was just beside herself and, you know, yelling, screaming, and just like, we're no longer her kids. And I mean, just losing her mind. She told dad, called him up, and they didn't know what to do. And so while that's happening that night, my younger sister and younger brother, you know, they're like, what, you know, they're just, they don't know what to do. And my younger brother was pretty young. I mean, he was like 10 years old or so, but my sister was a little bit older. And so I just asked her to come back to my room. And I'm like, you know, let's just stay here. And I tell my brother and sister to handle mom. And I'm like, I'm going to take care of the sister here. And she's crying and I'm trying to comfort her. And she's like, why did you do this? Why did you do this? Why did you do this? And man, I got to tell you, man, in the middle of her saying, why did you do this? I literally feel like the spirit come into the room, and I say, Jesus, are you here? And I hear him say, yes. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And he goes, I'm going to touch her right now. And I just look at her, man. And I go, I'm sorry. I know you're crying and all this, but do you feel something here right now? In this room? And she goes, yeah. And I go, did he just touch you? And he goes, yeah. And right there, that moment, man, it just, she comes to faith. Wow. Supernaturally. And my mom just is mad because they're freaking out because three of us, now the fourth one just came. Like, that's the craziness of this. I'm like, the first thing I tell her, I'm like, don't tell anybody. Like, no, this, like, we're not telling mom, not today.
Yeah.
No. So, but yeah, man, that's been the crazy ride. And then a couple of months later, my now brother-in-law takes my brother, a younger brother, and he comes to faith. And so, crazy ride, man.
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing, amazing. So cool to see. And I'm sure now really the legacy of your whole family is your trajectory is different because of what ultimately was your first, I mean, your brother who was first to the U.S., his his willingness to put his faith in Jesus has really changed the whole direction of your family. It's amazing. Now, you would have a great perspective on this. Sometimes you hear people try to say, well, religions are all just different ways of getting at the same God or different paths up the same mountain, these kinds of things. And if you had to, and I know this could be a very long answer, and you've already alluded to it a little bit, but if you had to just summarize what for you, even as a young Christian in your early days, what were the primary differences between Islam and Christianity, how you experienced those two faiths differently, what would you say to that?
Yeah, man, that is a... that's a question, you know, not an easy answer. In fact, we just did a series. I did a series called Why Jesus and Not All the Other Options at our church, and breaking down like why did I pick Jesus? Like why should you pick Jesus? Mm-hmm. Because you have a lot of choices out there. And there are some really great religions out there that teach a lot of good things and a lot, you know, give you kind of a handle on how to live a moral life. I mean, even parts of the Quran, there's all kinds of good religion out there. And there's bad religion out there. But the difference is that, you know, this person of Jesus comes in, and the reason why they're so, you cannot say it's the same, is because for a couple of reasons. Number one is that all of the faiths out there and all the religions, that their teachers and their prophets or their leaders, they have these great teachings and they make these claims of who God is and how you can find him, you know? And some of them talk about, hey, you experience God through customs or these kind of rituals, you know, you do this, or you can reach nirvana by this kind of contemplation, or you can reach and become a spiritual person by embracing this certain culture. Like, for example, you know, Islam and Judaism is that you become one of those, you know, so it's through culture, it's through contemplation, it's through a ritual, it's through all of those things. Yeah, but with Jesus, it's very different because number one, he doesn't claim to have all these great teachings, which he does. He makes some outrageous claims about who he is and who God is, which is very different. And mostly because he is saying that he is God smuggled into a human body, trying to tell us who God really is and what God is going to do and is what's going to happen. And that is that he is going to redeem humanity and all of creation through this act of sending a part of who he is into the human process. So this Christ that the book of Colossians talks about and Paul talks about is that this Christ is going to come in into, that he's going to be the actual DNA of Christ. He's going to come in through a human body, and they're going to call him Jesus, and other people will call him Jesus, but that's not the point. He's going to be born supernaturally, being raised as a human, be a part of us, and to show us who God really, really is and what he's about to do. And it's so big. It's so multifaceted because, like, number one, he's showing us who God is. God is a God who is very relationally connected to all of his things he's created. So he's the creator God, the creator, the father, as Jesus said, he is the father of all creation. Mm-hmm. You see, when we say, think Jesus says, talking about the father, we just think father, mother, relationship, human, son, daughter. He's actually talking about the father of all creation. So he is the father of all creation, and he is the son of all creation, which Paul's writings allude to. Am I still with you? I know
yeah, it's kind of... No, totally. There, but... Yeah, totally. And obviously all of that is going to be quite different than Islam. And would you say that, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people will come to appreciate about the Christian understanding of God from Scripture is that notion of that he is personal, that he's relational, that he loves you, he has affection for you. I don't. My understanding would be you don't get a whole lot of that in Islam. That relational loving dynamic is not really as present. Would that be accurate to say? Yeah,
that's accurate. And that was the one reason, one of the things that that was attractive to me, or I was against this idea of the human and the divine. Like in Islam, they don't meet.
Yeah.
They're very separated. If for God to come down and be a part of us or to relate to us, or would no longer make him the Almighty. It would taint him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when you have Jesus coming and touching lepers and hanging out with sinners and doing this and saying this and doing this, you're like, this cannot be God, because where is his majesty? Where is his holiness? Mm-hmm. You know? That's why Muslims consider Jesus a prophet, because he was like, there's no way God would do that. So yes, very much so. The big difference is that there's a God pursuing us, wanting to be with us, wanting to be in us, giving a part of himself through his spirit, and no longer wanting humanity to be looking around for religion. I mean, what Jesus offered was a temple-less faith. Well, that's why the Pharisees were so against it.
Right.
And for us, it would be like Jesus offers us a church-less faith or a mosque-less faith, where you don't go somewhere to get. You get infused. You
become the temple.
You become the temple.
Yeah.
God invades you, which is mind-boggling. You know, like, oh, okay.
It's good
for develop a relationship.
Yeah, and it's good for people to hear that differentiation, because I think that for folks who will encounter people with different worldviews, you know, sometimes we could say, well, oh, there are good things about their faith, and that's great to be appreciative. And I do think, because of common grace, there are beautiful things in all kinds of different traditions and worldviews. But for you to explain what you just did, I think gives us motivation to recognize there really is something different and freeing and powerful in the Christian gospel, and just to not take that for granted. I'm curious, when it comes to encouraging, and you're pastoring, so you're thinking about some of the same things I am with regard to helping encourage and equip people to share their faith. When it comes, now you're in the middle of the Bible Belt, which is such an interesting place to be relative to being a leader that's right. Who's Pakistani from a Muslim background. But when it comes to encouraging folks to for sharing their faith with people of different backgrounds, whether it be Islamic backgrounds or some other background, what would you say might be some things to pay attention to? You're talking to someone who's not, oh, I grew up in the church and have fallen away, or I grew up Catholic, or my parents were Catholic, but I've never been part of all that. But they still probably breathe the air in a little bit of a Christian tradition. But there are many in our country, and even in places that are, you know, like in the Bible Belt, there are people now from all over the world, from all different backgrounds. Any principles you'd share with us on sharing your faith with those kind of folks, people like you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, so what's beautiful about Mosaic, the church I get to lead, is that we have a mosaic of people. So which means we have a lot of people who are not sure about their faith, and we have different nationalities. So it's a very international church. Mm-hmm. We've actually have a couple of Muslims that come to one of my new good friends is from Afghanistan. He left. He escaped the Taliban 3 years ago, and a young guy, and we've been spending a lot of time on my porch and just hanging out, talking about faith, and he wants to know. So his starting point, number one, people need to understand, that is very different from a person whose starting point is, I grew up in the Western world, or grew up in the U.S., or grew up. He starts very differently, you know? And so I think in talking to people from different faiths, you got to find out where is their starting point. And to assume everybody has the same starting point is just naive.
You know?
And so I think that's number one. The other is to find out, to ask more questions and to feel, or to stress yourself out by asking the right questions about them more than freaking out about like giving them the right answers.
Uh-huh.
Because people who are genuinely are going to be affected by you, and you care for them, and you want to show them what this life with Jesus could look like, you want to be in a relationship with them, and you got to start asking really great questions about who they are. My biggest thing is that now my story is very rare, extremely rare, 3 weeks, supernatural,
right?
Called to faith, very public about my faith, started a church. I mean, it's unheard of, all that. But my early experience, they were all college students, so they didn't know better. But I didn't think they cared about me.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just cared about getting me saved.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say stuff like that. We just didn't get you saved. And I'm like, dude, I don't need to be saved, man. Save me from you. That's what I need to be saved from. But I think if people understand that you love them, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
The other is to respect the uniqueness of their belief, which gives you permission to stand firmly on yours, which means you don't have to you don't have to say everything that's bad about a Muslim's faith to be strong in yours.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is you have to respect the uniqueness of theirs and say so they get to see the uniqueness of yours. And so when you say, oh, it's all the same, you're just not undermining it. You're dismissing the beauty of both faiths.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you go, okay, this is unique about yours, but let me tell you what's unique about mine. And I just think, and so my conversations, man, are filled with people. Like one of my best friends is Hindu. There are people who, I'm constantly hanging out with a guy who's atheist, and we have some really good conversations. But he knows at the end of the day, I genuinely like him.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll believe what I say.
Yeah.
So start with asking questions, get to know where their starting point is. And then if you ask those questions, the Holy Spirit will lead you and show you what their deepest fears are and how you could speak into them and how Jesus is the answer for those.
Yeah. That's so good. I love just the idea. And what I hear you saying is really live a hospitable life. Make space for people in your life. Make space for relationship. Truly care about the person, and care about their tradition. Care where they come from, and do what it takes to understand that. Do you end up finding yourself ever? And now with your unique background, you might not feel like you need to as much. But do you find that you need to do a little bit of ever learning or study on someone's background or worldview if they say, you knew Hindus, but I'm guessing you would probably encourage listeners, if you're having, if you have a friendship with a Hindu person, do a little work and find out more about Hinduism. Would that be something you would encourage?
Yeah. I think I think it's critical to do the information, to get your information about a person. Like, for example, if I met you and you're like, and I find out, okay, you grew up Hindu. Well, that doesn't, if I go and read a book about Hinduism, that doesn't tell me anything about you.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because Hinduism is so vast. What kind of Hindu were you?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? So I can only find out from me. So find out exactly who they are. I've got this guy, Afghanistani guy. Afghanistani Muslim is very different than black Muslim in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely different. There's no book on that. You can get the basics, but some of those, they don't even believe the same stuff. So what the problem is sometimes is that let's not come across like we know them and figured them out. And they're like, you have no idea, man, who I am. For example, I've got a friend who's Jehovah's Witness, or Mormon guy, and I'm like, okay, tell me your experience. What does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And you come to find out they don't even know about their faith. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They don't even know. So what they don't want to feel like is you're the expert on the faith that they never learned. You know, does that make sense?
Oh, it totally makes sense. Yeah. That totally makes sense. And I just, I think it's a great encouragement. I mean, you don't even, what I hear you saying is, hey, you might be able to learn some basics from going online and reading a book, but ultimately there is just nothing that substitutes for knowing people well, asking great questions, and being a student of their lives and respecting their journey. Do you think, now speaking of just journeys and how they shape us, you're pastoring a church that you planted. How old is Mosaic now?
18 years, bro.
18. Oh my gosh, we planted at the same time. We're 18 years old as well, and I planted as well 18 years ago. So yeah. So when you think about now, I know some of your kind of church planting influences and connections, which we have some overlapping relationships in that regard. But what is unique for you is you come in with a background that, on the one hand, you've learned from some best practices when it comes to church planting. But have you felt like your unique background has shaped how you approach leadership or kind of the flavor of your church? And if so, how so?
Yeah, it totally has. First of all, I did not realize how much my background was going to affect me being the lead pastor of a church and then starting one from scratch. Partly because is that for at least 10 years or more of our church, I had to convince people I wasn't a sleeper terrorist.
Did people actually say that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, so newcomers for luncheon for you looks different to for me.
Yeah.
Because there are guys, there are people in the room going, I don't know about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe it. So like it was, I mean, I would joke about it, but it was real. So, you know, after 9/11, that changed the game, you know, for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had a lot of Muslim terrorism going on around the world. And I'm Naeem Fazel. I didn't change my name to Nikki something, you know?
Right.
Mosaic is still Mosaic, sounds like mosque, you know? And people would joke about it. And I'm like, and I'm not part of a denomination. So it's like, yeah. I mean, that affected me because I found out that that some of the things that leaders, as church planters, wrestle with, I struggle with, I can't even get them to buy into, you know, me.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime, you know, I've had one volunteer a couple, several years ago who I'd, you know, he was always in the cafe or outside in the foyer and all that. And I noticed one time, I'm like, I don't know if this guy ever goes in. I've never seen him inside the auditorium. And so I just asked him, I was like, hey, man, I just noticed you've been to the auditorium, right? And I know it's a crazy question. And he said, man, honestly, I can't be in the enclosed room with someone who looks like you.
Wow.
I was like, oh. So he was in the military, fought in Afghanistan. And he was like, man, people like you shot at me all time. I can't do that. And I told him, bro, you don't ever need to come in the auditorium. You know? So see that? I mean, talk about leadership. What kind of leadership law is there? Like,
yeah,
what do I do with
that? I don't know if you'll ever take a class that prepares you for that kind of a conversation, but how much, man, it's so cool to hear how much grace you extended to him, because it would be easy, human nature, to be offended by that statement, regardless of what was behind his unwillingness to come in. But man, I just totally commend your grace and your pastoring in that moment to walk with him, despite what his hangup was. It's really cool.
Right, right. So I think for me, I mean, it's been really challenging in different ways. I mean, it's also been intriguing for a lot of people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there. It's just tricky, man. Like, you know, as with our staff, we joke about it. You know, I'm the best thing for Mosaic and the worst thing for Mosaic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they're like, oh, this guy is unique and all that, and then they're like, I don't know about this.
Interesting.
So. Because, I mean, you know, I mean, there people want to be, I don't know, like, I mean, I've had families who are like, you know what, I'm just not cool with raising my kids where the pastor is brown. or Pakistani is the next Muslim.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I hope that,
like, okay, man.
I hope on the flip side, it would seem like there would also be a subset of people who are really, I mean, obviously that what you just described is sad and tragic and really just straight up wrong for somebody who comes to that conclusion. But I would sure hope there are people who also are so attracted and drawn to your church because they go, based on my heritage or perhaps other reasons, I can connect here. Do you see that as well?
Oh, yeah. That's the beauty of it. That's the best thing about why I'm the best thing for Mosaic, you know, in a sense, is because the amount of ethnicities we've got and nationalities. I mean, I think we're like almost 30.
Wow.
And there's so many mixed couples. It's like, so my wife is, you know, from South Carolina, you know, a blonde, you know, Southern girl. And so our kids are brown and mixed and all that. And we have so many mixed couples from mm-hmm. all over, and it's normal. And so they feel a normal when they're there. And I've had families, the beautiful thing about that is that I've had families that say, hey, I just wanted to go to a place where my kids don't stand out mm-hmm. and they feel normal.
Yeah.
That no one's looking at us when you walk in. And when you come into Mosaic, you don't know who's with who, you know, it's like, it doesn't look like, oh, they're a cute family. You're like, I don't even know if they're a family. They could be.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
Like people who are, you would never like, you like, you're with so-and-so and you're like, you'd never put together, they're together. And the same is with the church. I mean, the people who would never be in the same room together are in this room. And that's why we love, our mission as his church is to reclaim the message and the movement of Jesus. And we're trying to create a space where people who would never eat, play, you know, live together would actually do all those things together. And so that's why we've got, you know, all kinds of people, but with different views. Yeah. I mean, spiritual views, political views, you know, moral views, but the ones on the extreme, they don't come to Mosaic. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? The ones in the middle, they kind of like, okay, let me just, who are searching and willing, those are the ones we journey with, you know?
Wow. Sounds like a beautiful church. And that really is the way church ought to be. What you're describing is just this place of hospitality where people are coming together. And the thing that really unites them more than anything else is the gospel itself, is Jesus itself, and is Jesus himself. And that doesn't mean, obviously, cultural differences are unimportant, and we still want to respect those and understand right. those. But I just think that what God is doing at Mosaic sounds incredible, and it's so cool. It's a courageous place to lead where you chose to lead. There are other places probably in the country that could be a little bit easier relative to your
background.
I know.
Background. I don't know. What was I thinking?
You know, but you got good weather at least, so that's a great thing. But I just think it's amazing that you got rooted there, and you're creating space for a whole lot of people to find a church home that's vibrant and life-giving, and I just think it's amazing. Anything else, Naeem, that you'd like to share before we're done today?
I think we covered a whole lot, bro.
Yeah, we did.
A whole lot. Yeah, we did. Yeah, just look out for the book, possibly, that could come out.
Yep.
I'm really passionate about that one because it's going to tackle some pretty big topics, like especially for trauma and people who've, you know, experienced loss and death, maybe even suicide, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah.
That's going to be a great project. So you've got ex-Muslim that was, as we've established now, 10 years old, but still an incredible read. So I would commend that book to anyone who hasn't had a chance to read it yet. And then you're working on a project now that is so in development that we can't give a for sure title just yet. But I'm sure if you follow Naeem on social or keep your eye on what's going on at Mosaic, you'll be able to find out about the book's drop when it comes. What was the date you said that you expect the book to drop? Do you have a date even yet?
They don't even have a date. Too far
away.
I know it's going to be next year.
Yeah.
It's next year.
Yeah.
It's next year for sure.
And you're on social, so people will be able to follow you on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for the conversation today, and thanks for being so vulnerable about your journey to faith and your background. And it's just been awesome to hang out. I can't believe that after reading your book 10 years, here we are having this conversation.
It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
And we still look good.
We probably look like we're in our early 20s. I think that's what everybody who's watching on YouTube is going to be thinking right now. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much, Naeem. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Bye, bro.
Later. See you. Well, what a great conversation with Naeem, and I hope that this conversation encourages you to realize that God is God who loves people, and He is actively pursuing us no matter what our background, no matter what obstacles or objections or religion that we come from. And so that person who sits next to you at school or lives in your neighborhood or works next to you at your job, please know God is pursuing them today. And maybe God wants to use you to build a relationship with them, to hear their story, and maybe you'll even get an opportunity to be a voice that changes their story and helps them encounter and meet the love of Jesus. If this conversation encouraged you, I want to ask if you could please rate and review our show. That makes such a big difference. This has been a production of Engedi Church, and we've got more incredible conversations on the way. And so, until next time, just know you were made to advance.